We're going to do three sessions on the Megillah, and we're going to do a textual analysis. Okay, I'm going to ask you the most basic question. When did the events of the Megillah historically occur? Roughly. When?
586
BC, no.
After.
1100s?
Yeah.
Like, after the destruction.
Well, 1100, what do you mean, like talking about like 1,000 years ago?
No.
When did the Megillah event occur?
Wasn't it after the destruction of the first temple?
Yes. How much longer?
70 years.
Correct. Jonathan Rosen, ladies and gentlemen.
Sweet Jonathan.
70 years.
He read the first.
What? Okay, bottom line is like this. The Jews, the year 586, the first temple is destroyed. The Jews are exiled into Babylon.
What is Megillah?
Bridges.
Megillah means literally a scroll. And this is part of the. There are three parts to the Bible. There's the Torah, the five books of Moshe. There's the Nevi'im, the prophets, and there's the what they call the Ketuvim, the writings. Part of the writings is the five Megillot, which is I'm gonna have to stand up. Megillah, story of Esther, story of Ruth, Shir HaShirim. Lamentations, which you read on your Tisha B'Av, as well as and Ecclesiastes, Kohelet. Okay, so roughly, so the Jews are in exile toward the end, 70 years later. Who defeats the Babylonians? Who defeats the Babylonians?
Jews.
No. Persians, correct. The Persians defeat the Babylonians. They're in charge. Okay? The question is, who is Achashverosh, the Hebrew word, Achashverosh, related to his Greek name? Because we have a list of the Persian kings. So many want to argue it's Artaxerxes II. Okay? All right. So let's... Much to talk about that, but what we want to accomplish in our three sessions together, I'm going to learn you how to look at the text critically, and we're going to base upon the take a pshat. Pshat means to try to understand the core principles that are immediate in the basic text without dipping into the bag of midrashim, which there are a lot of. Okay, we'll get to that. So without further ado, who'd like to read? This is actually going to be too loud to read.
We'll put some
water on the rock. It'll be great. Okay. Who would like to read? Who's volunteering? All right, Katie, go ahead.
1252. One with no voice. Okay.
Yeah, we'll take turns.
And it came to pass in the days of Ahasuerus.
Just say the Hebrew name, Ahasuerus. Everybody. Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus. Good. I know, but
Ahasuerus reigned from Hodu to Kush over 127 provinces. That in those days, when King
Ahasuerus,
thank you, sat on his royal throne, which was in Shushan, the capital, Shushan, in the third year of his reign, he made a feast for all of his officials and his servants, the army of Persia and
Media,
the nobles and officials of provinces being present. I'm done reading. I have no.
Okay, we're going to go to Scott. Scott, you do a little bit, and then we're going to go around the room. Then Matt, you're next.
Which man?
When he displayed the riches of his glorious kingdom and the splendor of his excellent majesty for many days, 180 days.
All right, so how long is the party?
180-day party.
Okay, we'll talk about that. Go on.
And when these days were fulfilled, the king made a week-long feast for all the people who were present in Shushan, the capital, great and small alike, in the court of the garden of the king's palace. There were hangings of white fine cotton and blue wool, held with cords of fine linen and purple wool. Upon silver rods and marble pillars, the couches of gold and silver were on a pavement of green and white and shell onyx marble.
Nice.
The drinks were served in golden goblets, no two goblets alike. The royal wine in abundance according to the bounty of the king. And the drinking was according to the law, without coercion, for the king had ordered all the officers of his house that they should do accordingly to every man's pleasure.
Okay, stop. All right, so we have two parties. The first party is 180 days long. Who are the? What's the guest list? Who's on the guest list?
Everybody.
Nope.
People who are present in Shushan, the capital.
That's not.
Small.
Nope. No, that's not correct. That's the second party.
The army of Persia.
So it's the officials, servants, armies of Persia, Media, nobles, and officials of the province being present. So basically, it's a. It's mockers and administrators, mockers, aristocrats, the players of the entire empire. Why is he having a party in the third year of his reign? What's the goal of that party? And also, how can you have a 180-day party? In other words, the longest party anybody here has been with, I don't think has exceeded like 7 hours, 10 hours.
Did he have re-election?
Well, right, correct, right. So what's going on there?
He did an equation and he miscounted. He thought that the Jews were never going to go back to Israel.
Where do you see that? That's a Midrashic idea. You're bringing a Midrashic idea. But from the, I'm talking about from the plain, that's why I said, the plain shot. Why is he having a party for these guys? Why are these people important to be impressed?
They're like the leaders, the main guys, the army.
Okay, so what is a king, even if you're a tyrannical king, what are you constantly concerned about? Right. You're worried about being assassinated, you're worried about being overthrown, and you want stability in your empire. So basically, in the third year of his reign, when his administration is fundamentally somewhat solid, he's bringing everybody in. Now, how do we, in our modern context, how do you understand a 180-day party? What does that mean? They're drinking for 180 days?
Sure.
So, no. The closest equivalent in our world is the convention. Has anybody been onto a trade show, like the Vegas?
Yes.
Okay. So tell me about how long is a typical trade show? 3-4 days?
Yeah.
And how much time do you do meetings and clients
during, like during the day, and everyone's partying.
Exactly. So there's a blending of working and partying. He's having all these people here. Now the reason why it's 180 days, I don't think they were drinking for 180 days straight. The bottom line is like the good people from Kush would come in. Because remember, they didn't have they're not getting on a plane here. To schlep from Kush, Ethiopia, to all over the ancient world, it took weeks to travel. So when that delegation came in, they had a party. But basically, what do? During the day, they talked about how are things going in Kush. Are you collecting the taxes in Kush? How are the bridges in Kush and the people in Kush? And this because he wants to maintain. It's half business, and a whole lot of pleasure. Okay? Now, what is he showing to these people? What is he showing? He's looking at the answer is on my face.
Displays the riches of his glorious kingdom.
Right, he's showing the riches of his... Why does he want to do that? He wants to impress them. What is he basically communicating to them?
Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
I'm doing well. Keep.
You hang with me. Things are going to be good. I got the gold. You'll have the gold. If we play nice together in the sandbox, we're all going to make a whole lot of money. But then he had a second party. How long is the second party?
A week.
Who's on the invite list?
Yeah, great and small, like
everyone but the.
The people of Shushan. What is Shushan?
Yeah.
It's a capital city. It's like it's Washington D.C. Why is he having a week long party in Shushan?
What, to keep the locals happy?
100% correct, Scott.
Ding ding ding.
As they say. Keep your enemies close, but your friends closer. And what is he again? If you're afraid of, and you'll see later on, this was a legitimate concern of being assassinated. So you want the people in Shushan to you want your public rating, your approval ratings in Shushan to be what?
Happy.
Happy. What is the main focus of the second party, and what's the main focus of the first party? Look at the text.
Please, the people who would, hire an army to take him over.
Okay.
He also wants to please the locals who would rise up and take him out.
Correct. But notice that the program of the party is a little different. Look at the text. Again, I want you to look. The goal here is for you guys to be reading the text critically. What are the differences between the two parties?
The air conditioning.
What?
Race.
Yeah, race air conditioning. Yeah.
Thank you, Adrian.
I'm just dying here.
Mutant in this room.
This is hot. So what's the difference between the two parties, guys? Look at.
When he was displaying the riches for 100 days.
So who's that? Yeah.
And that one's a week-long feast.
Well, the second one seems a little bit more fantastic.
What's
showy?
Okay, they're both kind of showy.
Yeah, but the people in the first party may have seen things like that before.
Correct.
Common folk may not.
Correct. So
no two goblets alike.
So the other one is where is there talking about abundant drink in the first party or the second party? Okay. Has anybody here seen a block party?
Yeah.
So my wife grew up in Bell Harbor. So Bell Harbor is a place that they take their block party. It's like Staten Island, kind of blue. Collar kind of workers, kind of vibe.
Big Lloyd.
Screw it up.
So.
Too loud.
Yeah, it's too loud. I guess I'm on the screen. Let's leave the door open. Okay, that's a good idea. Let's leave the door open.
Is this too much?
That's fine. Is it really cold though, or is it just on fan?
It's on low cool.
All right, whatever.
It's better already.
What are they talking about? Oh, block parties. So tell me what a block. Who can tell me what an American, classic American suburban block party is?
All the families come out and set up like a little. Yeah.
What's the first thing you do in a block party?
Shut the roads.
Thank you. You shut off the roads. You block off the roads. So the party's happening in the common street, and then what do you have? In the middle of the road?
Tables.
Food. First of all, you have the tents, because usually in the summertime, it's a million degrees hot. And what do you have in those tents?
Food, drinks.
What kind of food?
Barbecue.
What kind of drinks?
Beer.
Kegs. Okay, lots.
Wine coolers.
Not wine coolers. wine coolers are for wussies.
I
know. But you've heard other people do. Exactly. Anyways, so the Shushan people, the focus of the text is more on the wine, because they're not, they want to be impressed, but they're more about they want the booze. The other one is there's hardly any mention of the booze. They're a little more aristocratic, a little upper crowd. They'll have a little beverage, but they're about the money. They're about the power. The other people are like the regular people. They're not going to get any power. They want the food and the drink. So he tailored the parties for each audience because he needs both constituencies. He needs his local group, and he needs the administration throughout the entire empire. Okay, what kind of person do you see Ahasuerus being already?
A wheeler and dealer.
Yes, you do not become a king of 127 provinces and be a big fat idiot. Do you understand how hard it was to, without sophisticated communication, no machines, to run an empire of 127 provinces? Do you know what that would be? That just boggles the mind. We have no idea how that would possibly run. The amount of slaves and workers and running that massive, that's an administrative nightmare. Okay? Let's continue on. We get to the next party. We get the Gamvasht and Vashti. Go on. Let's have Matt. Vashti, baby.
Vashti, the queen, also made a feast for the women in the royal house of King Ahasuerus. On the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, he ordered Nehuman, Bithia, Harbona, Bigtha, and Abigail.
All these guys, seven chamberlains who would go on.
Seven chamberlains who attended King Ahasuerus to bring Vashti, the queen, before the king wearing the royal crown to show off to the people and the officials her beauty. For she was beautiful to look upon. Is there a reason why he has to read this?
No. You're next. Because otherwise you're next. Why? Hold on, Matt, is there something you want to share with all of us? You're among family here.
But Queen Vashti refused to come at the king's commandment, conveyed by the chamberlains. The king therefore became very incensed, and his anger burned in him.
Okay, so Vashti's having her own party. Why is she having her own party?
For the women.
The queen's only.
Notice it says Vashti the queen, because she also wields power. She's a macherette. You have a macher and a macherette. So she has the thing for... She's running the women's party. And then, Achashverosh, when he's, you know, at the end of... After 180 days of the first party, after the seventh day, the last day, he's starting to feel, you know, he's pretty exhausted. He's, you know, the wine's starting to get to him a little bit. He's had one l'chaim, too many. He tells the seven chamberlain to do what? Bring out Vashti to do what? To be beautiful, she is beautiful.
To show her off.
Let her do the catwalk. Show off what he's got, what she's got, what he has. Now, funny thing. What happened? Why did she say no?
She's a woman.
Notice now, if you notice Queen, notice very carefully in the way that look at the terms of how Vashti's name is used initially and then again.
Vashti the queen.
Okay, yeah, is that accidental? Who refused?
Queen Vashti,
in other words, it's beneath my, I am a queen, I'm not, you want a hooker, you get your own damn hooker, I ain't doing that. I'm the queen. That's bottom line, that's basically what she was saying. So now he has a little problem here, because now he's been publicly
humiliated
because... What's the irony? He's trying to show he's this powerful guy. After 100 days of whining and diving all these official and aristocrats, and then with the small fry people, he's the man. And then, what it shows? He can't even control his own house. Skadoosh. Okay?
Skadoosh.
Skadoosh. That's all you got to say with that one. All right, let's keep on going.
Skadoosh.
But
like, also a little backstory. That's a shot. King Ashurbanipal actually wasn't a king.
Okay, so you bring in again the Talmud says that really the true part of the empire was Vashti, and he got in and he overthrew, and he's not really royal blood. That's a backstory that the Talmud gives. But even so, he's now angry. Why is he angry?
He ain't getting any respect.
Right. So he's now publicly embarrassed. He's shown to be really that the emperor has no clothes. Completely humiliated, and he's trying. Now he's got this big ego that's been punctured. All right, skadoosh. All right, verse 13. All right, Mariana. 13. All right, so you have a whole list of names. Fine. Okay, the seven offers. Right. So he, by the way, knows he has the chamberlains who are his personal butlers. Those are the ones who were asked to do his personal bidding to get the wife, the queen. And then he has separate seven guys who are what?
His council.
Now, why do you give Achashverosh credit right now? You should give Achashverosh a measure of credit. What is he not doing? Exactly. He's not flying off the handle and getting and doing something crazy. He is turning, even though he's angry, he's turning to counsel what should be done in the situation. Because basically she has flagrantly disobeyed the king in a state function. And I mean, what's the deal here? Now, if you're one of these advisors, what are you feeling?
Pressure.
Pressure. What's the pressure?
There's no right answer.
You, my friend, have got a problem, because if you do something that is emotionally satisfying now, like get rid of the queen, kill her, persecuted, that will be good for now, but what's going to happen? The alcohol is going to wear off, and you're going to be the dude that suggested to kill the wife. How's that going to... Now, again, we're talking about a person who is similar to Saddam Hussein, basically, who can do... He has the power of life and death over everybody, his entire empire. And this is a person who kills people who are insubordinate as a regularity, as it was done in the ancient world, and tragically, even the modern world. Okay. So you can look up Shushan. They actually excavated that. That was, it was a capital city. It's in modern day Iraq.
And this is a Jewish?
No, it's a Persian Persian capital city. Capital city. You can go on Wikipedia. I looked it up. It's a place, and there and it got centuries later it got defeated, and then it just like it became not a town anymore. It got crushed, but. Non-Jewish king, the Persian king. The Jews are not even mentioned, which is, by the way, an interesting thing. In other words, interesting thing, this is part of the books of the Bible. Not one mention of a Jew yet. We're now fully immersed in Persian politics.
House of cards.
With Persian politics.
Doesn't mention God also.
Doesn't mention God. Okay, we're going to get all this. Okay, we've just begun. All right, we're going to have Mariana, Bavakasha, keep on going. Mamuchan. Okay, so what's his solution? What's his argument? What? But there's going to be, she's going to start a feminist revolution where we're going to overthrow the authority of all men. And if you don't put her down, show who is boss, there's going to be an entire revolution in Persia. Now, is that reality? Likely not. Okay, but... But what did Mamuchan strategically do for his boss? What's really the deal? What's really happening?
He created an excuse for him to do something bad because he created a storyline that she would do something even more dangerous.
Right. In other words, really he was embarrassed by his wife who did not want to do the walk of shame for him. Okay? Okay? So what does he do? But he says, no, it's not that he's not... It's not an issue of a husband and a wife not getting along and one not showing respect for the other. No, this woman, if you don't deal with this, this is going to be an entire insurrection, entire empire. And people are going to hear about this and all the women be blowing off their husbands and princes and everything. So you need to get on this right away and make a new law that everybody's got to respect their husbands.
This is
an example of what they call sophistry. It sounds logical, but reality it's a legal fiction created to solve an emotional problem. Really, they should have found a way for him to walk back the embarrassment. Sort of, you know, they have in Washington, you know, when you do something foolish, how to walk it back to deflate is not sort of like work it out so you can move on. He's escalating it. Let's go. Let's see where it goes on. Go ahead, Bavakasha. Then. Thank you. Okay. So we made a rule that, I mean, now, is this an issue that's really subject to governmental rule? That every wife should respect her husband? No, that's not. It's not something that can really have a really effect in the confines of a house. It's not something that you can't legislate that every wife should respect her husband as much as you can respect have a rule that every husband should respect their wife. That's an internal issue. It's not subject to governmental reach, if you will. So what happened to Vashti? According to the text, what happened to Vashti? So you could say technically that she just says she's banished and they took all her money, her estate. The fact that giving her estate to somebody else would suggest that she's being executed. The Chazal rabbis say that she wasn't banished, she was permanently banished. You know? So she was removed. As in her head and the rest of her body. Okay. Okay, so that's it. All right, let's keep on rocking here. No, this is a brutal world. Right, right. Not going well. All right, chapter number 2. All right, we go on to Maor.
After these things, when the wrath of King Ahasuerus subsided, he remembered Vashti and what she had done, and what had been decreed against her. Then the king's pages said, "Let there be sought for the king beautiful young maidens, and let the king appoint commissioners in all the provinces of his kingdom, that they may gather together every group of beautiful young maiden to Shushan the capital, to the harem, under the charge of Haggai the king's chamberlain, guardian of the women, and let their cosmetics be given them. Then let the girl who pleases the king be queen instead of Vashti. This advice pleased the king and he followed it."
Okay, so so he's feeling sad because he missed his old Vashti. What did the young man of the palace suggest to solve his problem? Correct. Now, how is this an example of a tyrannical violence, which you'll see later on in the text?
How is it a what?
How is it an act of tyranny? Well, go ahead. Unmarried. Good-looking unmarried women. Beautiful young maidens, which means unmarried. In other words, who have not had sex before. That's what I mean. That the Hebrew is bistulah, the virgins. Young, beautiful virgins. So what's going to happen now? Since we can't do all 10 chapters in 3 sessions. We're going to get to Mordechai in a moment.
Why is it bold in text?
I'll get to that in a second. Let me get to that in a second. Okay, we're gonna. All right, let's see. Let's bring our new character in, which is Mordechai. Go ahead, Mordechai. Read it out loud.
There was a Jewish man in Shushan the capital. His name was Mordechai, son of Jair, son of Shimei, son of Kish, of Benjamin.
Yeah, Ishimini, part of the tribe of Benjamin. Okay.
Benjamin, who had been exiled from Jerusalem along with the exiles who had been exiled with Jeconiah, king of Judah, from Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, had exiles. And he had reared Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, since she had neither father nor mother. The girl was finely featured and beautiful, and when her father and mother had died, Mordechai adopted her as his daughter.
Okay, so Esther, or her other name is Hadassah, what happened to her parents? They died. And who's a relative that's taken her in? Who is her what?
Uncle.
No, read. No, look at it. His uncle's daughter.
His uncle's daughter. That's your cousin.
Thank you. His cousin. Thank you. All right. So he adopts from his cousin. Okay. All right. Go on.
So it came to pass when the king's bidding and decree were published, and when many young girls were being brought together to Shushan the capital under the charge of Haggai, that Esther was taken into the palace under the charge of Haggai, guardian of the women. The girl pleased him, and she obtained his kindness. He hurriedly prepared her cosmetics and her allowance of delicacies to present her, along with the 7 special maids from the palace, and
he transferred her and her maidens to the best quarters in the harem. Esther had not told of her people or her kindred, for Mordecai had instructed her not to tell. Every day, Mordecai used to walk about in front of the court of the harem to find out about Esther's well-being and what would be done.
Okay. Do the women of the Ahasuerus Empire have a choice whether or not to be part of this beauty pageant?
No.
No, they're taken. What happened to, it says Esther was taken. Why was she taken? Because she's good looking. Simple as that. Okay? What's going on? So Mordecai gave her an instruction. What was the instruction? Do not tell anybody you're Jewish. Why is that? Well, there. No, they have a. It's a it, the Jews live in the Jews live in the society. They're not. Well, that's a good question. Does she want to be picked or not be picked?
She's going off the ride.
I think she wants to be picked. Otherwise, she would have told him that
she was Jewish.
Well, you could say reasons are given. I'll give you a couple possibilities. One reason that she would elect not to identify herself being Jewish, if you want to keep Shabbat and Kashrut in a Persian pagan environment, you're not going to get a lot of support. So basically you have to do it what? Covertly. So he said, that's number one. Two, is that even though the Jews, we'll see later on, there is going to be a death decree against the Jews, this is a anti-Semitic community. Not open, not so, you know, and this is right now in a lull right now. So basically being openly Jewish is like, it's not going to be, will not go good for you. Or in other words, Orthodox Jews in America, till the 80s, did not wear kippot in the workplace.
What is
kippot? Yeah, kippah. One kippah, kippot. One kippah, a head covering. Why?
Discrimination.
Because it'll be latent discrimination. I mean, I know a guy who was had an interview with Arthur Anderson, which was a back in the day was a significant company. Little Enron problem. It happens. The guy's going for an interview in a position of finance, and he was not wearing a kippah, but he alluded to the fact that he's Shabbos observer. He's not going to come in, you know. He said, we don't want your type here. In other words, interview over.
Big.
This is like in the 70s, okay?
In a meal like 2 years ago.
Okay.
And they asked me if I'm working on set.
All right.
Really?
Now, by the way,
it's a company that's been sued for anti.
Now, by the way, in America, they don't have to. You don't have. They don't have to give. If a company has material,
Saturday.
Right? It's material work on Saturday. They don't have to hire. Or if you work for.
If it's like something that's like a BFOQ, bona fide occupation.
There you go. Exactly. All right. Anyways. So basically, for two reasons, if she wants to keep Shabbat, keep kosher, she has to go on. She has to go undercover. A, B, being known as a Jew is not could be dangerous to you. All right. Why is he show? Wait, why is Mordecai going to the court where she's? Okay, but she's in the royal court. What could be so bad? She get in. She has seven fine maidens to help her. What's the she's getting old? She apparently pleases the eye of Haggai, right? What's the guy's name? Haggai, the guardian of the women. He's a eunuch. Why is he a eunuch?
So he won't be tempted.
Yeah, so he will not participate in the pageant. Correct. Good answer. All right. So why is he visiting her? Logically, why is he visiting her? Well, better yet, this is the way you have to do Tanakh. Step into her body. You are now, you grew up in a nice, warm Jewish home in downtown Shushan. You know, you're living with Mordecai and the family. They took you in, living possibly a middle-class existence. Things are good. And then one day, there's a knock at the door, and there are officials from Ahasuerus' court who are gathering all the gorgeous women who are young girls. And she's taken. Psychologically, what would happen to such a person? Did it break down? This would be intense depression. Because what are the possible outcomes for her future?
Married to a non-Jewish king.
Everybody who's gonna, because we're gonna read off, we're gonna read very quickly. Here we go. Let's read verse 12. Let's get the full flavor of it. You got 6-7 minutes. Go ahead. Ma'or, b'bakasha.
Okay. Once the girl came to the king, she was given whatever she requested to accompany her from the harem to the palace. In the evening she would come, and the next morning she would return to the second harem in the custody of
Shashgaz,
the king's chamberlain, guardian of the concubines. She would never again go to the king unless the king desired her and she was summoned by king.
Okay, so let's understand what's happening to these women here. So they have to spend a year of preparation. I don't know what this is like, the world's greatest makeover with the oil and the oil of myrrh and cosmetics. So they're like in a spa getting all dolled up for their big night with King Ahasuerus. The big night happened. Doo-doo-doo-doo! Whatever they want to bring in for their special evening, use your imagination, they're given. They spend the night together. And then she goes to a new harem called the harem of the concubines. What is a concubine? What's a concubine?
Prostitute.
No.
Not
a prostitute.
She's like a woman just for sexual purposes.
It is a woman who is married, who is lawfully connected to the king. In other words, she's sort of married to him, but she's like a lesser wife. Now, what does she do? So now she sits in the palace over there in the harem there. What is she waiting for?
To get called back.
And if he doesn't call back, can she go marry? Should she date other guys?
No.
Can she leave? No. So basically, she's in a royal incarceration. She can have no personal life of her own. This is a terrible situation. And if the guy doesn't call you for 6 months, that's it. I mean, it's not much, you know. So tell me, what kind of society is Ahasuerus running?
Dictatorship.
A dictatorship. And what is the definition of a dictatorship?
One rule.
And what is the role of all the people in that society?
To
serve the king. All the people and their stuff are purely resources for his satisfaction. So what is he doing? He's taking literally a generation of all available women and doing what? Taking it for himself. Because these women, once they've slept with the king, can't sleep with a commoner. So they are all sequestered in the harem there with Shashgaz waiting to be called back. So really, it's a tremendous injustice there, because their whole personal life and the life of their family, it's over. Does he care?
No.
Okay. So now we have the poor, and among this whole calamity is one little Jewish girl named Esther, who internally you would imagine is having most likely, if it's 9 or 10, I would say 99 out of 100 girls, basically you would be depressed, curled up in a fetal position, near comatose and filled with anxiety, because your whole life has been shattered. Did I miss anything? I mean, and also, I just wonder what that dude looked like. You know, I mean, it could have been like a Jabba the Hutt kind of looking kind of dude. You know, I don't know what the king of Persia looked like 2,500 years ago. Put that in your I don't know if it was a long beard. I don't know about the beard.
Pointy beard.
Okay. All right. Let's go on. We got a couple minutes left. Let's go on. Now we have Esther's turn. Go ahead, more of a
Bakasha. Okay. Now the turn came for Esther, daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had adopted her as his own daughter, to come to the king. She requested nothing beyond what the king's chamberlain, guardian of the women, had advised. Esther would captivate all who saw her. Esther was taken to King Ahasuerus into his palace in the 10th month, which is the month of Tevet, in the 7th year of his reign. The king loved Esther more than all the women, and she won more of his grace and favor than all the other girls. So so that he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen in place of Vashti.
Boy, she rocked. She knocked it out of the park over there.
Yeah. Then the king made a great banquet for all his officers and his servants. It was Esther's banquet. And he proclaimed an amnesty for the provinces and gave gifts worthy of the king.
Okay, stop right there. So why did he pick her?
She's stunning, really beautiful.
Doesn't say that. He says he loved her more than all the other women. She won more of grace. The Hebrew word is chen v'chesed. He's a chen v'chesed. What is chen? I mean, grace. It's not a good translation. I would chen. Yeah, it's grace is a translation. Why did he pick her? Do you think statistically she was the best looking woman of all 2,000 women? She was a classy girl.
She had the best personality.
Personality. Now it does say that. What is it? Now it said before that Esther would captivate all that saw. Captivate all that saw her. So what really is going on there?
She's a hot Jew.
She is a hot Jew, but what makes her so captivating?
She's like an Esther style. She's got the flavor.
She's got the flavor.
She's got women of flavor. She's got all the ingredients.
I'm making an effort here, guys. Okay, so I will share with you before we leave. I'm going to make an argument here that it is since the fact that the Megillah does not stress, says that she was initially beautiful. That's why she's selected to be pulled in. But they don't talk about her beauty. They talk about the chen v'chesed. I would translate chen as more close to the term charisma. Or it says earlier that she's from a royal background. In other words, she's from her family, Mordechai. So if you're part of an aristocratic background, how do you carry yourself? Right. In other words, with a certain intrinsic dignity and self-importance. In other words, he detected from her, even though that. They're in a sea of gorgeous women, how do you even pick? So she had sort of an aura. She carried herself in a certain way. She had a charisma, a charm, that not just, knows what it says, that's why he's very careful to say that not only did he find her charming, but everybody else did. In other words, she was immediately, she got the best place in the house. Now, here's a key point. That's one dimension. Going with what Scott said before, Hashem's name is not mentioned overtly, and we're going to get to discuss why that is. But one dimension of this whole story really is the role of God's providence in this, in our day and age, which is what? Behind the scenes.
He's masked,
exactly. In other words, that Hashem is operating through the scenes here in an indirect way to facilitate, ultimately, a Jewish salvation. We're going to get to that more in detail. So, but one of the instrumentalities that he worked through was the greatness of a person. So her, considering that she was in that situation, most people would have collapsed. And if you're a woman and you're gorgeous, but you're filled with anxiety and depressed, how attractive are you?
Zero.
No, not attractive at all. Not too much.
So attractive.
All right. Okay. I stand corrected. Definitely less.
Yeah.
If she's crying and sad, yes. This class is so revelatory in so many ways. You know, we're an open book here. All right. We will continue this. The homework tonight. I'll give you. Please do me a favor. Read the next two chapters. We gave you a Tanakh. Use it. It's also online if you're lazy. Okay. So read the next two chapters. The chapters 2, 3, and 4. I sent it in the original thing. The link.
No, I'm saying to read it.
I should send it to you. I just told you. I will send it to you as well. Okay. All right, guys. Have a great night.
Yeah. 10:30.